Hello and welcome to 35 Minute Movies, a Vin Diesel podcast. This is the podcast where we're going through all of Vin Diesel's filmography, we're ranking and reviewing them, and we're just having a grand time celebrating the work of Vin Diesel. We're quite close to the end now. We're getting closer. It's really strange. We've been at this for a while now, which is weird to consider. As always, I'm Cameron, and as always, I'm joined by Vin Diesel's number one fan, Oase. How's it going?
It's going good, man. I'm excited to. I've got my baby Groot. You've got your Groot in the background. We're ready.
Can you guess what we're talking about today?
We're talking about Triple X. You know.
Yeah, yours is the sequel. Mine's is the baby Groot from the original.
Yeah, maybe I should scrap it for today.
No. We need the cuteness. Although I think him sitting next to Grogu might be a bit too much. Might be a bit too much for the camera to handle.
Overload.
Yeah, so if you haven't guessed, this week we're talking about two films of varying quality, one that disappointed and one that is just a great movie. So we're talking about Riddick and Guardians of the Galaxy. So right, so let's jump into Riddick. This is 2013. Directed by David Towie again, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is the third in the trilogy of the whole Riddick franchise that spans movies, video games, and short animated little films. What's the plot for this, if there is one? Because I'm pretty sure there wasn't much.
There's not really. Basically, Riddick has been left for dead on this sort of sun-scorched planet, and he finds himself up against like an alien race of like predators. And so he ends up activating an emergency beacon, which alerts two ships, one carrying a new breed of like mercenaries that are after him, and the other is captained by someone from Riddick's past. And it's basically him sort of dealing with all of these elements, some of these, you know, monsters and people, and that's about it. that's you know, even if you sort of want to say that's it, because it's a very sort of haphazard plot. What did you think of it, Cameron?
I just didn't even. Do you know what? It took me a while to watch it. Like I was pausing it. I ended up doing other things while it was on because it just didn't. Yeah. There was just, I don't know. I got about an hour in and I was like, this is just not working for me. I might as well just try and be productive while this is on because there's nothing going on here that I was expecting.
No.
It didn't even. So I respect the Riddick franchise for doing different movies for each, I guess. You know what I mean? I guess this is sort of more akin to Pitch Black in the terms of, like, they're stranded on a planet. But
smaller in that sense.
Yeah. And it's definitely less epic and the space fantasy element from Chronicles of Riddick is gone completely. Mm-hmm. So we're left with this sort of survival chase movie, I guess, where all these mercenaries are hunting them down. It feels very much like the video games in that sense, where it's like Vin being proper badass, like killing loads of folk and just sort of trying to escape, which he always seems to be doing. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's just, there's no much to talk about either. I think this will be a really short segment. We'll have to try and pad out the rest of the show with news because I just don't see myself. There's not much to say. What do you think?
I agree. It's like, I'm pretty sure we were sort of chatting about it. A lot of people complained after the Chronicles of Riddick that it sort of veered too far from Pitch Black. Because obviously, and which is a completely valid criticism, because Pitch Black is very contained sort of riff on Alien. And then the Chronicles of Riddick's like this gigantic space opera. And so the two are very different films. And so I think fans were sort of disappointed by that, and they wanted the more sort of grounded horror. So this is a return to the sort of grounded horror roots, but the thing is, it doesn't do that as well as the first, and then it doesn't do the sort of space opera as well as the second, and so it's sort of caught in the middle of the two. It's neither horror nor sci-fi, and it's sort of, it doesn't know what it wants to be, was my thing. You've got three sort of very distinct acts. You know, this first act is Riddick on his own sort of learning to, you know, survive with these monsters around him, and, you know, he ends up taking in this sort of dog type creature. the second act is obviously people on the hunt for Riddick, and the third act just, you know, action. But it just doesn't feel very cohesive, and there's nothing very sort of interesting sort of tying it all together, I think. And it's just, I agree with you, it's very boring. I found myself checking out, you know, a lot. I think there was big parts of the films that I just completely zoned out because I was on my phone or just completely just uninterested. And it's disappointing because there is so much potential in this world, and the first two films set it up really well, but it just, I don't know what happened.
I mean, the potential is there, like you said, like the world that they set up in the second one, and the stories and the lore, they went really deep in the backstory.
Exactly.
I'd imagine this is a budgetary thing, though. I'd imagine this is, again, because this one only got greenlit off the back of, well, it didn't get greenlit. The Universal didn't want anything to do with it, you said, and Vin financed it himself, basically. What was it? He made a trade? You said he made a trade?
Yeah, so he basically agreed to make a cameo appearance in Tokyo Drift in exchange for the rights to Riddick. Obviously, they're both Universal. And that allowed him to basically produce and fund the film independently. And then we were saying that, we saw that, when basically production was in jeopardy of shutting down because there was a delay in the finances coming through. So Vin then put some money of his own to sort of fund it until the loan came through. And in that sense, you know, it shows they're really passionate about it, David and Vin. And I love that. But I think that's what confuses me. I don't really know what happened then, in that sense.
I think, again, the fourth one's getting written mainly based, is getting financed again based on the DVD sales. It's all to do, like, it never does well in cinemas, and you can see sort of why. It's not one that has mass appeal. It's more of like a...
Yeah.
It's a very odd franchise in that respect, and no one really knows what to do with it now. I was so down on this because I was so looking forward to it. I really enjoyed Escape from Butcher Bay, the game I was playing. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is great fun. I'm hoping to start Dark Athena really soon, and then I was just hoping this would be thingy, but I don't know. I didn't like how it just dropped you in, and there wasn't much telling you like how the hell
there's,
he got there,
yeah,
or like
there's no sort of filler.
I suppose that's how the other ones went as well, because the second one just started with him running in a snowy planet. So
true,
I guess this is normal. But yeah, wasted potential. They could have done so much.
I think what strikes me the most about it is Vin wanted this franchise to be like Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
He described Pitch Black as The Hobbit, and then he wanted a trilogy, which, you know, I imagine would conclude with the fourth film, that was supposed to be like The Lord of the Rings, like this big epic sort of fantasy. And you can see that with The Chronicles of Riddick. So I'm not sure why they... Because there's none of the world building in this, you know? Like, considering how sort of vast the world feels in the second one, there's none of that in this. And so I don't know sort of what changed in the interim.
I guess it was budget. I would guess it's budget.
It must
you can
have
see
been,
it
yeah.
in the visual effects in this film as well, where they look better than Chronicles of Riddick, obviously, because it's better. But they're cheap for the time. They're cheap for 2013 visual effects, and you can tell that. Whereas in 2004, when Riddick came out, Chronicles of Riddick came out, they were like good for 2004 level of visual effects. Now we're sort of, they've sort of kept it in one location. They've kept it quite low-key, and they've done the whole back to the whole Pitch Black roots to try and save money, I'd imagine.
Yeah,
we could talk about some of the other cast. I guess Carl Urban comes back as that guy with the eyeliner,
Vaco, yeah,
forget his name. Yep,
Vaco, yeah.
And
Dave Bautista
shows up, yeah,
who's we realized we've got a double bill of Dave Bautista today. Yeah,
we'll talk about it a little bit after this, but yeah, it could have been so good. And I really hope 4 is a good one, but we'll see.
And we'll see. I'm interested to know what... Because you said you sort of zoned out after the first hour. I thought, like, not that I liked it, but I thought the first hour was the best. Like, I kind of... I did admire that sort of very stripped-back approach.
Liked it until the mercenary... Until, like, all the action stuff sort of kicked off.
Yeah,
so I liked the survival stuff on the planet. I was really hoping it would just be sort of Vin just sort of kind of surviving on this planet.
Yeah.
It would have been so cool if it was really horror based. So like Vin is just surviving on this planet that's trying to kill him until he gets off, and it's and like he meets his match of just like beasts and stuff. It would have been really cool. 100%. That could have been such a cool movie. And then they had to get all the I don't know, just lost its way.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I saw someone describing it. I've seen a few people describing it, in fact, as a creature feature, or like the first sort of half. And I think as a creature feature, the first half is very strong in like there's not a lot of dialogue. There's not a lot of sort of, you know, there's some voiceover, but it is mostly just sort of Vin facing off against these sort of monsters. And it is, in that sense, really cool, because that's, I think, when it sort of differentiates itself most from the other two. And it feels more like Pitch Black. But then, yeah, I agree with you, the sort of mercenaries come in and it just becomes so bogged down with stupid plot and characters.
let's move on. Let's get the scoring out the way then, shall we? Just sort of so we can talk about something we both like.
We're miserable right now talking about Riddick. Yeah.
So what are you thinking for an overall score?
I'm gonna go 2. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but at the same time, you know, I wouldn't say I hate it. I think there's a good movie in there. I think the first sort of hour of the film is strong. And we've not really talked about Vin, but I like his performance as Riddick. I've always liked his performance as Riddick. It's a cool character, and I think it makes it watchable. So for that reason, you know, I would go 2. Not good, but not completely awful.
I'm there with you. It's more of a negative 2 than you're sort of like not complete. This is a really bad film too. It's not really bad, but you know what I mean? It's not a positive 2.
I know exactly what you mean, yeah. Compared to the other 2.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I looking back through, I guess, maybe rose-tinted glasses at Pitch Black. We were quite down on Pitch Black on the first viewing, but like looking back, 100%. I know, like,
yeah, 100%.
Pitch Black was really good and really fun.
Yeah.
This is not Pitch Black. This is not like that. And then nothing in comparison to Chronicles of Riddick, which still is my favorite and still makes me happy and still is just the best world. So yeah,
it's
I'm
so
too.
Surprising. Yeah, and what about for Vin? What about for Vinness?
Vin, well, he's just sort of being Vin again. I'll stick with a 3 because I don't know where else to place it. You know what I mean? It's an iconic Vin role. Not the best characterization of the character. I think the video games do a better job of portraying Riddick than this does, actually.
Yeah.
I think he's more of a cool outlaw, and he doesn't seem to give off as cool an outlaw vibes in this. So yeah.
I've seen you play the video games, and it's Vin in that is just great. I'll side with you on that. It's not the most sort of Vinny performance, but you know, he's really strong in it, and you sort of do get the traits of, like, you know, that sort of rough, tough, badass Vin. I love the scenes when he's just caring for the alien dog. I don't know what species is called, but I love that. I love that sort of soft side of him. And you know, considering sort of Vin carries the whole thing, I think, yeah, 3 out of 5 for Vin Diesel-ness.
Lovely. So yeah, that's a 10 out of 20 overall. It places it sort of middle of the field, I think. So we'll have to talk about that in the ranking. So we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, directed by James Gunn, 2014. I feel like if you're watching this, you probably know the plot to Guardians of the Galaxy, I'd imagine, but could you tell me what happens in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, so it's basically, it's like this sort of group of intergalactic criminals that, you know, come together because there's a bounty on one of them. And, you know, they come together, they sort of get arrested, and they realize that they need to work together to save the galaxy. There's a bad guy with a plan to destroy the universe, and they are the only people that sort of can stop him. And it is a sort of very bare bones plot, but they do so much with it just because of the characters and the writing. Yeah. And it's one of my favorite MCU movies. I think you're the same, aren't you?
Rewatching it yesterday, I was like, this is such, this is like good. It took me back to 2014. I was like, this is such a breath of fresh air compared. Yeah. Like, it was the first time apart from Thor, where we went to space, it was just it's stylish. It's characters like the characters of the team work really well together. They've got a great dynamic. It's just so much fun to watch. The soundtrack still
is amazing.
To this day. Yeah. 7 years later, I am still listening to Awesome Mix Volume 1.
Yeah.
It is just, it's so good. I think Come and Get Your Love will live inside my brain for the rest of my life. Thanks.
Hooked on a Feeling. Blue Suede's Hooked on a Feeling.
Nothing. That's the thing. That trailer, iconic. With Hooked on a Feeling playing over that trailer. Yeah. I will never forget that. I will never forget the day I saw this. It was I waited specifically to see this in IMAX in Edinburgh. It was like one of the first times I'd really been to the IMAX in Edinburgh. And I waited specifically for it. And I had to wait like 6 days after release, which was not something I wanted to do. But I did it anyway. And I was just blown away by it. It's just such an immersive movie. And it's such a great film.
It's fantastic.
You can't help but love it. God, what do you want to talk about first?
I mean, just so much. I actually have a fun story about this one. When it came out, I was like 15. So I was sort of new into the whole press and film reviewing and stuff. I badgered the PR team for this so hard to try and get a red carpet. Like, first of all, I didn't know how to find out who the PR was. So I literally called every Marvel, every sort of PR company in London that had sort of done something with Marvel to be like, are you doing Guardians? Eventually found out it was, found out the company, phoned them, squeaky 14-year-old voice asking to get, obviously never got it in the end, but I remember just working. When I think of Guardians, I just remember working so hard to try and get onto that red carpet. I think to interview Vin, I'm pretty sure it was the sort of main reason.
This is what we need to do. Don't care about junket time. We need on that carpet is what we
Dude,
need.
Are
on.
They going to do premieres for Fast?
I don't
Line,
know.
Though? Like,
I don't know.
It's going to work.
Pandemic and everything, but
I know.
That's what we need to do.
But I just remember, that's what I think of. It was just badgering DDA so hard to try and get red carpet, but being like a no one, and then obviously it being a Marvel film, them turning me down. Sadly, but just to interview Vin.
That's what you gotta do, One day our dream will be fulfilled. 14-year-old Oasis will be like, yes, he finally got it. One day.
But actually, there's a good starting point. Groot.
Yes, Groot is a new.
Amazing.
The thing is, because for the last 5 years, he's been Baby Groot. Like, he's not been big boy Groot.
Yeah, by the way, yeah.
In my eyes, he is still like a teenage Groot now.
He's,
I think
he's young Groot.
He's not the big boy Groot that he is in this film.
Yeah.
And this, do you know what I mean? It's going back he is this adult. He is this massive hunk, and he is the emotional soul of this movie. He is just one of the.
Yeah.
For a man of little words, he it's the Iron Giant thing again, and I can see why they chose Vin because of the Iron Giant. It's really obvious why they got Vin to do this role, because it's such a saying lots without saying anything. It's pretty great.
I think Groot's probably my favorite character in this. I love the scene where at the end, they're sort of in Ronin's ship, and he just absolutely wipes out that sort of crew. And then just gives them the cheekiest, most innocent wee smile after. And I think that scene just perfectly encapsulates Groot. He's like so, so tough and badass. But also just, he's like so cute and emotional. And the We Are Groot scene as well just breaks me every time. Oh my God.
It's so good. And he brought so much to it. And I'm so glad that because it was so few words, so few lines, and so few things, they just got him to do all the languages as well. He does Groot in all the languages, so he's Vin Diesel everywhere. Usually just get someone else to go in to do it, but I thought that was really cool of him. So it's just
which I think is amazing. And because it's his real voice as well, isn't it? Like, I know they slightly modulated it for the second one, I think.
Yeah.
To make
it sound
younger.
Well, yeah, they have to modulate it. They pitch it up a little bit for the second one.
This is just pure Vin for the first one. And it's... You can hear him, you can... But then you also... Yeah, it's just... the way this film comes together I appreciate that it's like a bit darker than the other MCU films in its humor. I think it takes the comedy to some places that you wouldn't, at least nowadays, expect from, you know, Marvel and the MCU. They have quite a rep of being sanitized and stuff. And some of the jokes in this, I'm like, I was like cracking up at last night. Just forgot
how funny
it is. It's
the Jackson Pollock one for me, where I was just that's like, the one I was thinking, yeah, get away with that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The sort of, you know, when he puts up the middle finger and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot how this machine works. Just stuff like that. It's and Dave Bautista again, who was in Riddick, is also amazing. Drax is with his like lack of knowledge on metaphors and stuff, just so good.
It does so much. It's this area of the like James Gunn is great. I think James Gunn's direction this movie, the whole way this movie set out, it's written really well. I think I'm gonna have to reevaluate my list, because I think this has ended up slipping down and down the list, just because from years of not rewatching it and years of just like it just sort of you sort of forget about it, which is bad in a way because it is one of my favorites, but a new film comes out and like, oh my god, this is incredible, I have to put this at like number five, and then Guardian slips down one place and it keeps slipping.
But then when you watch it again, it's so fresh. And I think we're gonna talk more about it in the coming weeks, but that's my opinion of Guardians 2. It, like, especially because that's when I just forget about, like, every year, and it slips down. But that's you know, anytime I watch it, I'm like, oh my god, this film is just, and it's the same with Guardians 1.
Yeah, it's both the Guardians movies that seem to, like, along with Endgame, of course, that's just a separate kettle of fish, but the ones I remember seeing vividly in the cinemas are both the Guardians films.
Yeah.
I can remember
the
trips, and I could actually, if I sat long and hard enough, I could probably pretend and like replay the entire film in IMAX in Edinburgh in my head, in my memory, because it is that vivid to me. It was that important, I guess, to me, I guess. It was just, they're just great films, and I love them, and I can't wait to watch Guardians 2, which is in a couple of weeks' time, so that's
exciting. I think what this film does, because I remember going to see the first Guardians with people who aren't the biggest comic book fans. Like, they're just casual moviegoers. You know, they had seen some of the other MCU movies and stuff, and this is, you know, one of the, or at least, you know, at the time, it was one of the most obscure sort of Marvel teams ever, the Guardians of the Galaxy, you know. And for, like, casual non-comic book fans to come away from that film and just love it, and we've got cynical movie friends, and I know
I know what I you're know, talking about.
I know for a fact this is the film that everyone sort of cites. Is it's so universal in that sense, as a superhero film, but just as a film about people and characters, it's like so human, I think.
Even if you don't like space, like, my mum hates sci-fi. She hates going into space. She hates Star Wars. She hates all like that. She loves Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, it's just one of those ones where just, I get what you mean. Everybody loves it. Overall score for Guardians.
Oh, man.
You're thinking 5, but you don't know if you want to give it a 5 because Guardians 2 is a 5. That's what the issue is. At least that's what's going through in my head right now.
The thing is, when I think about, because, you know, when I think about sort of film, you know, giving films ratings, I think about it from like a critical standpoint. And I'm like, what is wrong about Guardians 1? Like, what is act? Like, I'm trying to think about it. And it just. I'm going to go 5. I have to.
Jesus. That's the thing. If you're doing 5, I'll go 5, because I've been sitting going, I think of it differently. I don't think about just the critical aspect. I'm like, enjoyment. I'm like, I pour everything in.
It's all of it.
I'm not like, it's everything. And then it's staying on the same peg as Guardians 2, though, because Guardians 2 is a 5-star film, in my opinion, I think. So it's
now,
like,
You know what? I think I'm going to go 4, and I'll tell you why. And this is something Guardians improves. Is the villain. Anytime Ronin or Thanos, Nebula, they're on screen, I was uninterested. Like, I really dislike the scenes with Ronin. I think he's one of the worst Marvel villains, actually. To the point where I forgot to talk about him.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about Guardians. Yeah.
And so, for that reason, those scenes do take away from my enjoyment of the movie. Actually, so I'm gonna give it a 4.
That's fine. I'll come down with you because Ego the Living Planet is much better, and that distinction between Kurt Russell.
I'm so excited to rewatch Guardians 2 though.
Oh, I can't
I can't. I've never had it pegged as a 5-star film, but no. I do feel like I have so much appreciation for this world and just the sort of in the last couple of times of rewatch Guardians, I always love it more and more. To the point where I think I'm just gonna fall head over heels for it again. So,
Vin Diesel though,
yeah.
What are you thinking? Because he's not Vin Diesel in this, but
he's not.
At the same time, I don't want to have it go low down. I don't want to repeat Iron Giant because when we go back to reappraising this list at the very end, I want to move Iron Giant up a lot of places. So,
I think that's what we should keep for the last episode, is then reevaluate the films. I think we should sort of stick by our guns.
Okay.
Our James guns. And for that reason, I'm going to have to give it the same rating I gave The Iron Giant. Which, I mean, no disrespect, because I love Groot. I love Guardian. But you know what? I'm going to go 2, and I'll tell you why. I'm not going to go 1, and I'll tell you 2. Because if we think about Vin Diesel in this, we think of tough, but heart of gold. Groot is tough with a heart of gold.
He cares about his family as well. You could argue that Groot is actually Dominic Toretto.
Yes.
You could. You wouldn't win, but you could argue that.
So for that reason, Cameron's going to give it 5 out of 5 in Vin Diesel this.
No, I'll give it a 2 as well. I think I was tempted to go up to 3 because there is boxes it does tick, but I think it's just too. I don't know. Where are the fast cars? You know,
exactly.
Not a single time this group drive a fast car.
The thing is, I feel like because we do know that we're gonna sort of spend the last episode completely reevaluating the list, because you know we were talking about Riddick and sort of rose tinted glasses. You know, I know we have that for like XXX as well, and you know, Pitch Black, and it. I think watching some of these other Vin films have made me appreciate other ones, and I think for that reason, I know, you know, we're planning on sort of reevaluating our list at the end, which I feel is then we can sort of talk about, we can sort of scrap the ratings and talk about just
the movies,
about the list, yeah, and you know where we would rank, sort of, you know, whether we want Guardians higher or lower than, like, you know, Fast 6 or like Knock Around Guys or whatever it is.
Okay, so that gives Guardians a 12 out of 20, which places it actually in the center of the list this time. So we're it's one of those things. We'll see.
It's above
Riddick.
It's
above
Riddick.
We can rest easy knowing it's above Riddick. So let's move on to the list. Now the list is slightly insane. I'll run through it now. Okay? So
this is the weirdest list ever.
I'll start from the top. So this is the best film ever made, according to us. Fast 5.
True.
Is number 1. Number 2 is Strays. Number 3 is Saving Private Ryan. Number 4, The Fast and the Furious. That's the first one. Number 5 is XXX. Number 6 is Furious 6, which is fitting. Chronicles of Riddick at number 7, which is Riddick 2, if anyone's wondering. Boiler Room. Number 8? Was I on 7 there? Yes, yeah, 8. Yeah. I need to put the numbers on the side of them because this is getting ridiculous. Guardians is at number 9. Fast and Furious 4 is at number 10. The Pacifier is at number 11.
It's too low down.
The Iron Giant is at number 12. So Iron Giant, Riddick, and Babylon all have the same rating.
Yeah.
So it used to be Iron Giant at number 11. Was it number? Fuck knows. So it used to be Iron Giant Babylon, but now it's Iron Giant. And so we need to figure out where we're going to put Riddick. Do we put Riddick below Babylon, in between the films, or above Iron Giant?
Well, I enjoyed Babylon more. I know you hated it. But Riddick's a more iconic character. No one has heard of Babylon AD. No one.
No one.
It's our least viewed episode as well.
My dad has heard of Babylon AD, actually. He was like, oh, that's the one where he has to take that woman across the world. And I was like, how do you know what Babylon AD is?
Your dad has taste.
Yeah, he's got a great taste in films.
I prefer Babylon, but I feel like Riddick's a more iconic character. But then I really hate Riddick. Like, the 2013 movie.
Well, it's upsetting to know that no matter what, Pitch Black will always be below it. Because it's a 9.
Well, we'll move Pitch Black up at the end. I say Riddick above Babylon. What do you think?
But not above Iron Giant.
No.
That's cool with me. That's fine with me. I don't care for either of the films, so you could pull them away wherever you want. So that now goes Pacifier, Iron Giant, Riddick, Babylon, Pitch Black, Knock Around Guys, and A Man Apart at the bottom.
Where it deserves to be.
I don't think that film's ever going to be beaten. I don't think there's anything coming up soon that will ever beat it. Let's see. I'd tell a lie. Next week is Fast 7 and The Last Witch Hunter.
Never seen The Last Witch Hunter.
Well, The Last Witch Hunter is supposed to be horrific, so...
Really?
But it's also got Judy Dench, I think's in it as well. Someone, a famous British actor's in it, and I can't remember who it is. They've only got 5 weeks left.
Yeah. Can't believe we're at Furious 7 already.
I know.
That's mad.
Life comes at you fast. You wanted to talk about some stuff... you wanted to tell me some stuff because I don't really know yet. The Fast 9, some reviews dropped, some select reviews dropped on the day of recording this week. So, could you tell me what the consensus is from these like three outlets that got?
It's the big outlets. It seems to be like Variety, the Hollywood New, Hollywood Reporter, and IndieWire. I keep saying
Hollywood News suddenly got that big scoop. The Hollywood News.
No, so the general consensus seems to be it's dumb. And some of the reviews were saying some of the action's a bit too much this time. But the general consensus is it's sort of more a return to like the Lin era of Fast than the last couple, which obviously, you know, Justin Lin is back for this. It seems to be that if you sort of are a fan of the franchise, you sort of know what to expect at this point, and it seems like it delivers on that. You know, the sort of grand, ridiculous action, the sort of soap opera drama, it feels like it does deliver on all of that. David Ehrlich, who's normally quite a cynical critic and hated Fate of the Furious and Hobbs and Shaw, really likes this and thinks it's sort of one of the better ones in recent years. And the other reviews were sort of positive about sort of the whole thing. It seems to just be a good time, and I guess that's what you want from Fast. I'm personally looking forward to it. Apparently, the ending's insane.
Well, of course, the ending's going to be insane. I've been Cameron. You can find me at CamsOG on Twitter, Twitch.tv/Camso_OG. You can go to ohifilms.com where you can find my new YouTube channel, Ohi Films, has a YouTube channel now.
Better plug that.
And Four Eyes and the Giant. This week I dropped my first video essay thing that I did for university, hoping to do more of those.
Autism, which was fantastic.
It's a great time. We love a bit of autism.
It's so professional. Genuinely, I watched it. It's really, really, really good. Really insightful, actually, as well.
It's 72 out of 100. It's one of the highest marks I ever got at university.
Yes. No, it's very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was it.
Yeah, so Ohi Films and Four Eyes and the Giant, the podcast I do with Jordy Steele, where we talk about nerdy topics every week. It's great enough. Great fun time listen. What about you? Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at OasisWace and on www.thefilmbyte.com. My weekly Fast reviews are continuing. These podcast episodes go up on Friday, as do my reviews. So today, I'll have just reviewed Tokyo Drift, which at the time of recording I haven't seen because I hate that film. So I don't want to rewatch it, but we're gonna have to.
You gotta force yourself. You gotta do it for the lore. Fast 9 has a lot of connections to Tokyo Drift.
I know.
You gotta get schooled on the
lore. I've not seen it in years, so this will be a good chance to get me watching it. But yeah, I've reviewed The Fast and the Furious and Too Fast, Too Furious. Today, Tokyo Drift.
That's exciting. I'm so curious how they'll explain the fact that Japan was stuck in 2003 when it should have been 2015. I hope they address
that. Yeah, true.
right, so that covers everything. I think we're good to go. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
For Fury 7 and Last Witch Hunter. See you later.